Morning, everybody. Glad you're with us on 88.1. It's Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast. I'm Tom Hall. Happy Bach's birthday. Bach was born on this day in 1685. I'm sure you're in a very celebratory mood because of that. And I'm in a celebratory mood because I've just read a terrific book, and I have the chance to talk to the person who wrote it. The author, Nicole Moniz, is originally from Baltimore, and she has spent a lot of time over the last four decades or so in China. She's written about China for New York Times Magazine, the LA Times, the Washington Post, and many other publications. She's also written four novels, the latest of which follows the journey of a classically trained African-American pianist from Baltimore to Shanghai, where he's recruited to lead a jazz orchestra in the years leading up to the outbreak of World War II. It's a suspenseful and beautifully crafted historic novel in which real-life people mingle and work with vividly imagined fictional characters. It's called Night in Shanghai, and Nicole Moniz joins me on the line from NPR West in Culver City, California. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you so much for inviting me today on Bach's birthday.
Well, I'm glad to celebrate Bach's birthday with you, and I really, really enjoyed this book, which is based on true events, and it's a sort of little-known slice of history about how black jazz musicians were recruited and brought over to China. And when they found themselves in China working there in Shanghai, their lives are obviously considerably different than they would have been had they played out in the United States.
Absolutely. For many of these musicians, the experience they had in China, as they wrote about it later when they returned to the United States, some of them published memoirs, some of them put their experiences up on the internet if they didn't publish a book. And from those, I learned that more than the wealth they attained, more than the chance to play on an equal stage, it was the respect that they gained in Shanghai that meant so much to them, because it was respect they always knew they deserved. These jazz men did a lot more than just benefit from well-deserved opportunities. They played a powerful role in China's modernization because they provided Shanghai with its soundtrack, the American song form mediated through jazz. So jazz definitely left its stamp behind and broadened hearts and minds.
How did jazz become so popular in China, so popular to the point where Chinese were coming to America and going to places like Kansas City and New Orleans and New York and recruiting people to come back and live in China?
You have to think about how jazz changed in the 1930s. And I believe, after the time I spent researching this book, that jazz changed in part because of the repeal of Prohibition. Prohibition, because it made drinking illegal, confined jazz to small secret spaces, speakeasies, private clubs. And these little spaces were perfect for the multi-voice, hot polyphony that was represented by the Dixieland era. But when the Volstead Act was repealed in 1934, suddenly you could go out and dress up and drink. The very character of the night changed. And so big ballrooms came up. They were immensely popular. Everybody wanted to go out and dance. Well, of course, the music had to change then a little bit. Larger orchestras, more tightly arranged. A more tightly arranged sound was required. A band leader had a much more important role. When this style of jazz and this dance life, this ballroom nightlife took off, it took off all over the world. All over the world, in every major city, there was a need for a jazz ballroom. And so scouts did go to the United States from Shanghai. And although they did recruit some bands from Kansas City, like the band that Thomas Green plays in, is based on Buck Clayton's band, which did originally come from Kansas City. I don't think the scouts went that far east, though. Clayton's band was recruited out of Los Angeles, even though they were from Kansas City. I think most of the scouting was done in L.A., San Francisco, and Seattle.
Mm-hmm. Easier to get to from Shanghai, certainly. Mm-hmm. And so Thomas Green is the protagonist in your novel. He leads a band, a jazz orchestra, in Shanghai. Set the scene about the city of Shanghai. This was quite an international melting pot, quite a bustling, vibrant, happening city, both things legal and illegal going on in the 1930s. The novel is set in 1936. What was Shanghai like in those years?
Well, first of all, the internationalism you just mentioned was huge. It was a free port. You did not need a visa. You didn't even need an ID to enter Shanghai. Anybody could walk in there who could physically get there. So it was completely international, total polyglot of languages and cultures. But it was also on the brink of war. And that meant, because China itself was very weak then, aside from the fact that it was being invaded by Japan, there were three factions in Shanghai struggling to control China: the nationalists, the communists, and the Japanese. On top of that, the city was virtually run by a criminal gang. And on top of that, it was also divided up into these little concessions, which were like little colonies. So France owned a district of Shanghai, and Great Britain and the United States owned a district of Shanghai. And by the way, in the U.S. and British district, for some horrible reason, they decided to apply Southern American race laws. So in that one area of Shanghai, our black musicians would have been ill-advised to try to enter a public building. But in every place else, they were welcomed.
Nicole Moniz, her latest novel is called Night in Shanghai. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Maryland Morning here on 88.1 WIPR. Let's talk and listen to the kind of music that was being heard there. It was not just American jazz, but it was also something called yellow music. What does that mean? What's that term referred to?
Yellow music was the hybrid sound that was born when jazz met Shanghai's popular local singing styles. That local singing style actually grew out of brothels from the late 19th century through the early 20th century. This was a primary place of entertainment at that time in a Chinese city. So as a result, the yellow music that arose when that singing style mashed together with the jazz and influenced American song form was almost always delivered by female vocalists, as it had been done in the brothels. This music that came up, this hybrid, became insanely popular. It was not just popular in dance halls and on the radio in Shanghai. It found its way into the movie scores. Movie music was composed and recorded in Shanghai. So yellow music went out not just around the city, but all over Greater China.
We're listening to Ye Shanghai, which is called Night in Shanghai, from whence the title of your book comes. This is a piece that dates from 1934, and this is the kind of music you write that it was considered so sexy and subversive at the time when the communist regime eventually was led to ban Western music altogether for, what, nearly three decades or something.
Yes, and in fact, the nationalists also wanted to ban jazz in the 1930s, and strangely enough, interestingly enough, the only group that was struggling for control of Shanghai that approved of jazz was the Japanese. The invaders supported jazz.
Of the many dimensions of the novel, one of them, which is a fascinating and eye-opening bit for me, certainly, was the description of the efforts to rescue Jews from the Nazis. This is, again, 1936, just before the outbreak of full World War II. There was a Chinese consul who's a real figure. His name is Ho Fenshan, who was giving people visas and doing what he could in Austria and Germany to get Jews out of the country and give them sanctuary in Shanghai.
A music novel of wartime Shanghai almost has to involve the Holocaust, because 25,000 Jewish refugees, including many trained musicians, were surviving in that city by war's end. As you mentioned, most of the refugees in Shanghai who came from Vienna were freed by the Chinese consul there, Ho Fengshan. His story is incredibly dramatic. It is dramatized in the novel. You will be very interested to read about his heroic efforts. However, they won't be entirely new to people who are up on Holocaust history. That is to say, you can read about Ho Fengshan's heroism on Wikipedia in English already. The really big, really surprising, true Holocaust story in Night in Shanghai is the Jewish resettlement plan. The Chinese government was encouraged by the success of the 25,000 refugees in Shanghai. Economically, they were successful. Culturally, they were successful. They contributed to the city in a positive way. Also, the Chinese government was desperately hoping that some Western power would come to their aid and help them repel Japan. A humanitarian gesture, they thought, might be just the thing. So, The Chinese government passed a law in April 1939 setting aside land in Yunnan province along the Burmese border. This was land made newly accessible by the Burma Road for permanent resettlement of 100,000 additional Jews to be brought from Europe, hand-selected for survival. Obviously, this failed. If it had not failed, there would be a small satellite Israel by now next to Burma. But under threats from the Nazis, Chiang Kai-shek yanked the plan. Not before money was smuggled and lives were lost in its cause, however. It was a grand failure. And I think it would be very interesting for people to learn about it in this novel.
Absolutely. But it's fascinating that they even tried, and they tried on the scale that they were, you know, attempting or aspiring to. It's quite something. Because actually, you said the ambiance there and the tensions that had to do with not just Japan invading China, but the conflict between the nationalists and the communists. There were all these factions at play.
That's right.
And at that point, certainly at the point that the novel takes place, it was completely unclear as to who was going to prevail.
That's right. And another element of the Jewish resettlement plan that makes it even more interesting is that the two men who spearheaded the plan and fought to get the rest of the Chinese legislature behind it, H.H. Kung and Sun Fo, who the latter was the son of Sun Yat-sen, these two men, a large part of their personal motivation in doing it is that they were committed Christians. They did this as a Christian act. They thought that this was what God and Jesus would want them to do. And I think it's really interesting that of all the countries in the world, China's the only one, as far as I know, that really stretched to try to help save Jewish lives.
I was delighted to see the Baltimore connections in the book. Thomas Green is from Baltimore, and there are several references to it. And I guess you grew up in Baltimore. What's your connection, and why did you make a connection with the main protagonist of the book?
Well, I did grow up in Baltimore. It's my hometown. Of course, the Baltimore I remember from the 60s and what little I can remember from the 50s is decades after Thomas Green grew up there. And even aside from the separation of those decades, of course, my life in Baltimore bore little resemblance to what his life would have been like. But to give him childhood memories of Baltimore, that's the most natural thing in the world for me. And I used every aspect of my life that I could. His grandfather lived on a farm outside Easton on the Eastern Shore. My great-great-grandmother was born on that farm. I have gone there and stood in those mosquito-whining woods that I describe in the book.
Nicole Moniz, the book is called Night in Shanghai. It's published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. We've got information on our website, wypr.org/Marilyn Morning. On 88.1, it's Marilyn Morning with Sheila Cast. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day.
Y'all.